You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. My guest this week is Dr. Kimberly McGeorge, who's here to take us on a journey into the reality of exorcism, possession, and deliverance. Together, we dive into the discussion of belief in reincarnation and the realization that for many cultures around the world, death is not the end. By looking at these cultures and beliefs, what do we consider is the reality of the afterlife? Kimberly discusses the variety of entities that can affect individuals and some of the encounters that she has had throughout her career. She also discusses the challenges that these bring and how she faces them down. When you felt different all your life, how does a psychic connection challenge you throughout every waking moment of your day? But before we get to that thought-provoking conversation, as always, you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up for Patreon for $4 a month. You can click the link in the show notes or go to patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters to sign up there. Ad-free episodes, early releases, bonus content, and more. A big thank you to my latest patrons, Liz and Olivia, and a massive thank you to everybody that signed up recently. It really does make a difference. It helps me every day help the show grow, and I appreciate every single one of you who supports the show through Patreon. Thank you. Mysteries and Monsters is also available across all social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. You can also use the mysteriesandmonsters.com website, where you can find news, episodes, and links to the merchandise, such as your t-shirts, which will look rather good on the beach this summer, so head there if you want one of those. As always, thank you to Dean Bestall for his marvellous artwork. The show is produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys, and Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange Network. Now, let's journey to the edges of what we know, on the hunt for those entities that lurk in the shadows, with Dr. Kimberly McGeorge.
My guest on today's show is Dr. Kimberly McGeorge. With a lifetime of paranormal experiences, Dr. McGeorge has a reputation as an internationally renowned neuropathic doctor. Kimberly combines science with possibility and has been experimenting in products and with her clients for the last decade and a half, in conjunction with 24 years of clinical experience in both the alternative health and energy healing fields. Kimberly, welcome to Mysteries and Monsters. How are we today?
I am lovely. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Your resume is quite impressive in regards to the subjects that you cover. And I'm always impressed and deeply interested when I speak with people like yourself, Kimberly, because I'm often interested to find out at what point in your childhood you began to realize that perhaps you were a little bit different to everybody else around you.
Oh, wow. It's really distinct for me. It was around the age of 3. And I knew I was different because, well, I didn't know. That's a lie. I didn't know I was different at 3. But now I know I was different at 3. So I guess I didn't know I was different till about the age you go to school, which in America, of course, is 5 or 6, usually, maybe a little younger. But I thought everybody could see spirits. I thought everybody could see auras. I thought everybody could see the multiverse. And I thought everybody, you know, bedroom ceiling opened up and they could see all the stargates and they could see all the ET races. Like, why wouldn't I think that was everybody's experience? You know, I only know my point of view. And of course, I thought that was everybody else's point of view. So it only took a few little conversations for me to be like, oh, no, there's something very, 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 very wrong with me. You know, so I mean, you know, that was my realization that I was different. But my first experience that I can consciously recall with, you know, the paranormal, which is actually the normal. I hate the term paranormal, actually, because it's the normal and it's only our programming in this reality that makes it paranormal. Mm. So it's actually reversed, in my opinion. But, you know, my first experience with the normal, you know, was at three, and it was, you know, through my remote viewing, which, of course, a three-year-old doesn't know the term remote viewing, and they have no idea what that means. But I lived outside of Chicago, which is a very large city, and there were a lot of sirens and ambulances and police cars and fire trucks every night. And I lived off a pretty busy street. And every time there was a siren, I saw a movie. It was like watching a TV show. Well, you can imagine most of these movies that I saw weren't too pleasant. They were rapes, and they were murders, and they were suicides, and they were domestic violence, you know, and sometimes they were nothing, and they were accidents, and there were decapitated children. But I didn't figure it out till many, many years later that I think the siren took me to the scene of the accident. So it'd be really interesting if I could remember what those were and then match them with like the police reports and then, you know, fire runs and stuff. So, but I bet it, you know, I think that's what it was.
I mean, that's interesting. So it's almost as if the siren was the signal for it to become available for you to view and see what was going on. And I would imagine, did this occur throughout the day, or was there specific periods when you seemed to be more open to these forms of communication, Kimberly?
That's a really good question. No one's really ever asked me that. So that's a really great question. I think because at night you're more kind of more in a theta probably state or a meditative state. So you can, you know, you're not busy. Your mom's not feeding you lunch. You're not running around. You're not in the car. You're more focused or unfocused, as the case may be. So to me, this siren thing happened more at night. But I will say, some weird times, not always, because now I have control of my abilities. Back then, I didn't necessarily or didn't think I did. But as an adult, I've been driving in the road, you know, on the road on a highway, and I've had flashes where I couldn't even see the road, where a movie would go before my face of an accident with groceries all over the road and the back window broken out and a woman lying in a pool of blood. And then, you know, 5, 10, 20 miles up the road. It freaks me out so much. Like it's exactly what I saw. And I think I'm seeing it in real time, you know, and then I arrive upon it. So it's just crazy. It's kind of crazy. That does happen to me still occasionally in the day.
Yeah. I've spoken to several people with abilities and foresight in regards to how they're able to view certain scenes and certain situations, Kimberly. I'm always interested in how, As a young person and your transition from being a child to becoming a teenager, when you began to sort of look at this kind of situation, because I find it very interesting that when these sights and sounds and experiences keep coming into you, I would imagine it can be quite traumatic because, as you refer to there, when do you get to a point when you start to look at how to funnel them to sort of protect yourself? Because I would imagine this kind of situation can be quite relentless if you're not prepared for it.
Oh, it was. I never wanted to go to bed. I mean, I was terrified. I had to go in my room even because, of course, I didn't even put it together, you know, at 3, 4, 5, you know, what was, I didn't even put it together with the sirens, although I would try to block out the sirens. So maybe a subconscious part of me did put it together. But I've always been absolutely terrified for years and years. I have to tell you, though, even though I shut out a lot of it, as so common, you know, we turn it off. It's just very traumatic. And if you don't have parents, which I didn't, that are helping you navigate it, but I did for my girls, I don't think you can figure it out yourself, because really the astral world, the fourth density, fourth dimension, and even the fifth are extremely terrifying. And I think that's one reason why, even if the collective conscious decides we do want to upgrade into a higher density, and we all want to turn on our psychic abilities that we all have, I don't think it's going to happen as it could, as a switch, a light switch on off, because the things I see, you know, even in my own house and in my own yard, most people couldn't stay sane and function and see the things that I see and that I deal with. And so, yeah, how can a child? I mean, most adults can't. They say they want it. Everybody says they want, you know, the sight and wants to see the densities and dimensions and wants to see the ET races and wants to see dogmen and Bigfoot and ghosts and demons and, you know, all the things and fairies and trolls and gnomes. it's not really that pleasant. And there's not just those things. There's all sorts of hybrids and all sorts of, you know, really terrifying types of creepy beings. There's also amazing, wonderful ones too. But yeah, the reality is quite different than the fantasy.
Mm. I think it's a prime example of be careful what you wish for, Kimberly, with a situation like this. So as you were growing up, mm-hmm. how did you kind of get the support you needed? Because as you refer to there, you know, your family structure was kind of quite flippant about what you were going through. Is it a situation where you had to go and look for ways to protect yourself or to sort of get a hold on what was going on? Or did you get some kind of guidance? Because often I've spoken to other people who seem to have gravitated towards other people with similar abilities or as we say, psychic abilities and working in that kind of field, Kimberly. Or for you, was it a case of you had to cut your own path and learn as you developed?
I did not receive any kind of mentorship or guidance until I was probably 28, 29. And then I met a woman who I walked into her office. I was working in a naturopathic clinic with her, and she was a counselor, licensed counselor, and I was functioning as a naturopathic doctor in the same clinic. And they made us all, because we were supposed to all kind of promote each other and, of course, refer our clients to each other, they made me go see her, you know, for a session. And so I walked in the door and she said, she almost fell over. I said, "What is wrong with you?" And she said, "The four beings, the angels that are surrounding you are like, wow." That's what the first thing she said to me. When so that woman, her name was Patty, became my mentor. And I don't know, I lost touch with her many years ago, but she actually was a lot of the Hollywood stars' psychic, and she was my mentor. She was actually Julie Roberts' personal counselor and psychic. And she was my mentor. So that was my first mentor. And I couldn't have had, and you know what? The things, she was such a great mentor because she taught me to read timelines, which is one of my strongest abilities. So sometimes if I want to look at my life, it can be pretty boring because I can see my own timelines. Yeah. I can see what's going to happen next year. I can see what's not going to happen. I can see what I could make happen with a little effort. And so she taught me how to read timelines, but she also read many, many, many years of my life past 28, because I'm 53 now. And the things that have come true that she said at the time looked like she was, you know, not telling the truth and crazy. One of the things she said, my oldest daughter was a teenager at the time. And she said, "One day your daughter will manage your business and run your whole business." And my daughter's like, "Yeah, that's never going to happen." But for the last 10 years, that daughter, I have four daughters, that daughter has run and managed my business. And this was like 15 years later. So she was just a very, very accurate psychic.
I mean, what was the challenge before this kind of situation occurred then, Kimberly? Was it difficult to kind of function in the real world with all this going on and lacking the kind of support or the ability to turn it off, as it were, and protect yourself and your family? Because obviously, I think often when we talk about this kind of situation, we tend to focus on the individual rather than the family unit. And I would imagine that if you're having such traumatic experiences, visions, situations occur for you, I would imagine that that could have led into a domino effect for the people around you. So for you, was it a case of just kind of sucking it up and dealing with it and just trying to get through things on a day-to-day basis until you kind of had this support appear for you?
Well, it was kind of dangerous to my family, but more the only time it kind of crossed over was, you know, when I would go to them for help and they were like, "No, there's nothing in your closet," type of thing. But one time when this is when I was younger and my brother is a baby, a male human discarnate, which I call them instead of ghosts, but ghosts appeared next to me. And he said, "Why don't you poke your, you know, baby brother with a diaper pin?" And I'm like, "No, I'll get in trouble." He said, "No, it'll be really fun." Of course, I did it and I got in trouble. So they did suffer a little bit because of the influence of, you know, the beings that were influencing me. But again, I shut it down pretty quick and didn't share. And I also shut off my own abilities. You can't completely, we're all very intuitive psychic beings, but I shut them down as far as, and I see this a lot in adults and children. I see it a lot in adults that did it when they were children. They shut off their psychic abilities. So I played the game as best I could as a very imaginative, a very dreamy, very rebellious black sheep kind of child still, which was part of, you know, a result of who I was, you know, at the core. But as far as my abilities, you know, until I got to college and started outing them and using them, you know, with my peers, which brought me a little bit of, you know, attention and fame, you know, I really didn't, it didn't really bother me. It was just who I was. And I would just kind of, like you said, you know, pack them away.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think that's difficult, especially for a young person, Kimberly, that as you refer to there, people will try and discuss things and speak to friends and family about their experiences at most parts of our life. And often when we're faced with ridicule or disapproval, we tend to pull it in from ourselves. And as you refer to there, you will meet people in all walks of life who have basically got to a point where they've turned themselves off from being able to utilize their skills. Do you think that's a situation where more people are becoming more open about this kind of subject and these abilities? Or do you think that there is this still a stigma or a pariah that approaches people when they feel, you know, when people think it's not just a hunch, it's not just a strange feeling, they are tapping into something else, whether they want to or not?
Well, thank goodness for the, you know, the Bigfoot shows and the ghost shows, Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, Finding Bigfoot, all these shows that came out, you know, in the 80s, they really started making the paranormal mainstream and popular. And I live in the southern part of the United States, which is still, you know, the Bible Belt, still very religious, church on every other corner. And so most people think it's really cool what I do, you know, when I tell them, and they're amazed, but there's still some that think, you know, including my parents, my dad's a pastor, who think I'm like, you know, the child of Satan. And my parents did try to depossess me, and the church tried to depossess me personally many times because of my abilities.
I mean, that's a very interesting thing, because as someone with a deep interest in the paranormal, there are very few organizations that would often be built around the whole history of spirits, because it's a key tenement of the Bible, the ghosts and spiritualism, in my opinion, Kimberly, because we talk about the Holy Trinity and the Holy Ghost and visions and being able to communicate with higher beings. And for me, I find it strange sometimes that depending where you are and people's perception of the writings of the Bible, they can view it in a very different way. And I often find that a very interesting kind of conflict, as it were, that it seems to be, has to be the right kind of ghost or the right kind of spiritualism for it to fit. Do you know what I mean?
That's a really great point. I haven't really exactly thought of that before, but it's a really great, that's so literal. The Holy Ghost, hello. No, there's no such thing as ghosts. Well, maybe there's no such thing as the Holy Ghost either then. Like, let's be a little consistent here, you know. That's a great point. That's a great point. I love it.
So I would imagine that was very challenging. Was it a case of, for you then, in your early part of your life, that you basically had to hide this away until you just thought, well, I just don't care anymore. I'm going to accept who I am and embrace this.
Oh yeah. Like, I got in trouble. Yeah. Like, you're not allowed to do things like that in a Christian family, at least in my Christian family. You're still not allowed. I'm still not allowed to do it. They just pretend like I don't do it. You know? It's so funny. I love it. Denial is a powerful thing.
Yeah. Is it that kind of case where you just basically said, right, you just make conversation, don't be telling people things?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my parents never talk about what I do. Number one, I don't think they really understand it. But number two, I think they're afraid to, you know. That's funny. Yeah.
So in regards to yourself and your career in regards to this, at what point did you start to have people come to you for support? Because I know you had to deal with some pretty sort of testing paranormal experiences as a young person in your late teens and early 20s, when you're looking at things like trying to help people deal with hauntings and exorcisms and things like that. Mm-hmm. Kimberly, was it a case of people would come to you because they knew you were more open-minded and that kind of led to you helping them? Or did you actively kind of say, I want to help people?
Oh, no, I didn't actively say. I didn't. I honestly didn't know what the heck. I probably still don't. But I honestly didn't know what the heck I was doing. I just sort of, when you go away to college, I went away, three states over from where I lived, and I was away from my parents. And I thought, I could start letting a little of the real me out. So, my friends would come to me and say, is this guy like me? Or is this, is my boyfriend cheating or whatever? I knew the answer. I could see, and so as I got a reputation for being extremely accurate in what I knew, even my ex-fiance used to say, oh, you know things, in a real spooky way, because I did. I just knew things, and I was right about them. And so I developed a really solid reputation on campus for being kind of the go-to for advice. And then I lived in a kind of a cult, belt, O-C-C-U-L-T, where there were a lot of covens. Mm. And so the local police got wind of me and brought me in some cases to help them. Not formally, it's not like I was advertising myself as, Ms. Fox, the psychic or anything, but, they'd heard of me and they were just experimenting and opening their occult crime units in the 80s around the time that, I was younger. And so I kind of got pulled in the early years of their experimentation with consulting, really anyone that could help them understand these just horrible, weird and bizarre crimes. Before that, most police departments didn't really deal too much or even see too much of that, but it was kind of coming into popularity, I guess. I don't know why, but it was.
Yeah, it's very interesting. There seems to have been a real kind of sea change in the 1980s, especially in the US. We had a fairly, not as probably as far-reaching as what happened, but we certainly had several incidents over here that kind of fell into that category, Kimberly. So was it a case of, as you refer to there, they just wanted an outside kind of view to help deal with this because they simply couldn't get their heads around it? I mean, what would you think I wouldn't understand how the police would come to me and say, oh, by the way, can you help us with this? I mean, what was that like?
It's weird because when you're young, you don't kind of have as many fixed perceptions of what's going to happen to or how, well, at least I didn't, of how things are going to happen. So it was just kind of like another day. It was just kind of acceptable because, it was a time of rapid change and discovering yourself. And, there's a lot of new things, when you go away from home to college. So I kind of just took it in stride. It seemed normal to me at the time. I don't know why. I kind of began to think it was my mission. This is something I was going to really get into and do a lot of kind of like the Catholics. I do a lot of exorcisms. I really thought maybe I was put here, kind of to help drive out evil spirits and all that thing. I kind of started getting a big head about it, to be honest with you, because I was so successful. So I'm like, well, maybe this is my life purpose. But what I learned is there's a heavy, and we don't hear a lot about the other side of it. We hear about the glamorous. It's really not glamorous, but people think it's glamorous. They're like, oh, how cool, you do exorcisms? No. That's the opposite of cool. Now I actually just pulled out a couple of human discounts up someone a couple of weeks ago, and I still paid a physical, like in my energy being price for doing that, because we tend to think that these entities and energies and beings, no matter what beings they are, that they're just nebulous, wispy wind things. They're not. They have personalities. They have allies. They have powers, just like we have powers. And a lot of things don't happen in a vacuum or a void. There's a cause and effect. This is a mirrored universe. It's a cause and effect universe. So I pull out a human discarnate that doesn't want to go unless they're extremely gentle and extremely forgiving. There's going to be a little bit of payback there. And so not only, and that's an easy, I don't call pulling out human discarnates, which we could talk about, an exorcism. An exorcism is when some dark force energies, powerful godlike energies have set up inside a person for sinister and nefarious purposes. And that's a whole different ballgame. I mean, these days, I won't do an exorcism without bodyguards. And you have to commit 2 weeks of your life. We don't know if it's going to take 2 weeks, but it often can take 2 weeks. And, you know, my prices started five figures. So exorcisms are not this little fun light thing that you just flippantly, you know, go to exorcism school and do, as you know. But a lot of people don't understand that that is a tremendous, dangerous, life-threatening activity.
Yeah, I was going to say, as you refer to that, it's probably the arrogance of youth, as we've all been prone to over the years, Kimberly, that I would suspect that it's only when you realize what you're dealing with that you have to then start to take the steps, as you refer to there, about protecting yourself and others around you to make sure that the toll isn't too great on you. I mean, was that something that surprised you at the beginning, or were you kind of going into it with your eyes open, as they would say, and it was only when you had a negative, challenging experience that you realized that there was far more to this than, as you say, the whole glamorous kind of lifestyle that's often put forward when we deal with subjects such as this?
I think I underestimated because, again, I was, you know, my dad was a pastor, so I was taught that, you know, you use Jesus kind of as your shield and that protects you from anything and everything. Well, what I learned is, no offense to anybody, but it doesn't. I learned that these beings' power and their access to their memory and their wisdom was way beyond me. So in essence, I think I got lucky the first couple times, but I did pay some really, really, really heavy prices later on down the road, kind of over false confidence at the beginning, and then I kind of sunk in the middle. And now I feel I'm very realistic, you know, with what I'm dealing with. And I have a real good handle for the most part. I don't want to say that too cockily. I'll get proven wrong, you know, but I have a better handle on a lot. But you know what? When I talk to a new client or I deal with a new situation, I'm still learning about new groups of entities. And now we have AI. AI is really... came full force on the scene. So now, you know, we're dealing with people that are uploaded into the cloud and AI entities and groups. So you're not just dealing with like a dark spirit, you're dealing with like, a hive mind AI darks. There's just so much more to deal with these days than there used to be, it seems. Maybe they were there, but we didn't know. Now we know. We have the knowledge of, you know, the cloud and the hive mind and these AI groups that, like the Borg, you know, Star Trek tells us all about this. You know, it's been around forever. But so there's a lot of AI stuff going on, and a lot of high technology is being used against us. And so we're going into people and we're finding more than just a spirit, like get behind me, Satan. You know, it's a lot more sophisticated than that.
Mm. Would you say that when you first started investigating and dealing with these cases, that you thought it was just a demon or it would be just a ghost? Are there different types of entities that you've come across, and are there ones that are worse than others? Because obviously the preconceived idea is that possession can only be caused by a demon, Kimberly, or a poltergeist will always only be a ghost. Is it a case of it's not that simple? It's not as black and white as that. It's certainly not as cut and dried as that. There are so many different facets to each individual case.
Yes. And you can have multiple human discarnates in you, plus a dark force energy, plus an incubus, succubus energy, plus AI, plus ET groups. Like, it can be really multi-layered. Then we go into the home. So we have to look at the different layers of what I call proximity or vicinity. So, you know, are these beings in your body? Are they just standing next to you in your energy field? Are they in your home? Are they coming in and out of you? Are they on your property? Are the portals on your property that are letting them in? Are the portals in your house letting them in? Do you have portals in your energy field that are letting them in? So it's a science. It's so complicated and multi-layered. And it's not simplistic at all. It's not like go to the pastor of your church and have the elders pray over you, because often, you know, and here's the other thing that even the Bible refers to. It's easier to get something to leave than get something to stay gone.
Mm. I mean, there is something I've discussed a couple of times with other people who've worked in exorcism, Kimberly, is once again, it's one of those things that people have a presumption that, well, if you get it to leave, then that's it. But as you say, leaving is very different to going, because they can leave But they've got to go somewhere. So where do they go when they have been removed? That's always one of those situations, because I've always been deeply interested in this kind of facet when it comes to possessions or exorcisms, that we look at the situation of something being removed from a person or a building, mm-hmm. or even, mm-hmm. even an inanimate object. And mm-hmm. and I don't think people look at the ramifications of that, because surely for me, if it's in one thing, it can't just go somewhere. It has to be somewhere, if that makes sense.
Yes and no. So a lot of the work I do right now is basically like negotiation. And not all beings will negotiate with you, but many will. So if they don't negotiate, sometimes you have to bring out the big dogs of destruction. And I've destroyed many, many beings. They've gone back to what I would call the void or nothingness. So they sometimes do, when they're very, very stubborn and they really need to go, sometimes they do go nowhere. But most of the time, I would say about 80% of the time, they go. And again, if you want to read the Bible, this is a very similar pattern to that. Not that I'm a big Bible fan. That's another call show probably. But you know, they go where I send them to go, because I'm the one asking them to go. So I get to decide where they go and what's satisfactory to me. And of course, I'm standing in proxy for my client or my dog or my kid or my, you know, friend. It's not always a client. And so I'm the authority here, and I get to decide where they go. Now, if they want to have a conversation, I've had many beings say, oh, do I have to? Because a lot of times I'll send them to my enemies. And yes, I have enemies. They're human, and they probably deal with a lot of not nice things because they weren't nice to me or my children at one time. But a lot of times I'll send them to people that have severely crossed me. I've had people commit felony crimes against me, so they get a lot of my stuff. But sometimes I'll give them a choice. I'll say, you can go back to the void yourself. You can go, a lot of them, the dark forces, they like the hell realms. We'll send them down the hell realms. They'll sometimes ask to go back to another place or realm or dimension or timeline. And I'll say, okay, you can go wherever that is, as long as you agree not to return here. So it's a negotiation. It's a conversation. We are not taught that each demonic energy, and I'm putting that in air quotes because I have another belief about that. I don't even believe in demons and angels anymore. I do believe in kind of, but a little different. But we're just not taught that they're individuals. They're individuals, and just like you, you know, if you and I were having a problem, you and I have to work it out as individuals. We group them all together. Angels, demons, ghosts, Bigfoot, dogmen, you know, all the fairies, these huge categories. But each individual, just like, quote, humans, we're all individuals. So are they, and they have to be approached individually. And I had, you know, dark force spirits start to do really horrific things to me. And then we stop negotiating, you know, and we do other things. You know, I just end it because I'm not going to get in a battle with a dark force, a high level ancient being. It's stupid, you know?
I mean, I think one of the other aspects of this is, Kimberly, as well, often people will say, well, people have encouraged this kind of attraction, either by their behavior or their belief or whatever. And I've never really understood that kind of situation, because often it seems to me in the cases I've read and the people I've spoken to, a lot of these people aren't doing anything that would suggest that they deserve to be.
I see what you're saying. Most people think you have to be plopping down the Ouija board, or, you know, or stirring your cauldron, or calling them in, you know, reading the Book of Solomon and calling them in or whatever. Or going to, you know, satanic meetings or something. They think you have to be dabbling or watching a horror movie, something.
Yes.
Absolutely. You are 1,000% correct. I find it's the innocent ignorance. Why do you think, I mean, go to a restaurant, you'll see a heck of a lot of possessed babies these days. Like, why do you think children are a top category of possession? It's the innocence and ignorance. It's not, it's actually the opposite. You got it. That's a very astute observation. You know, a lot of times, to be honest, the people that are doing that are less possessed than your next door neighbor. We're seeing a tremendous amount of succubus incubus attacks, 9 out of 10 every night, including me. And I know about this stuff. And so you would, you know, what would your pastor say, or what would a normal exorcist say? Well, look in your life for entry points. And I have found some entry points and I have shut those down, but there's still problems. So part of it is understanding the world you live in. Part of it is understanding the dimensional realms, the astral realm. What kind of creatures, you know, travel in the fourth and fifth dimension that overlap with the third dimension that we can see and feel and touch and taste? It's understanding your reality. Once you understand your reality, your point of view that you're sharing on your show that is very intelligent and very not normal observation, to be honest, this is not what I would consider a low-level conversation. It's an upper-level conversation. Obviously, you have been around the block a time or two, you know, topic. But it's nothing you're necessarily doing. If you move into a house and there's four open portals, you know, one's neutral, two are dark, and one is light, and they're like highways. Sometimes the frequency in a portal only lets higher light beings through. Sometimes a frequency in a portal lets both all types of beings through. And sometimes a frequency in a portal will let only dark beings through. So if you're a normal English person, American, Australian, whoever, and you live in a house, are you checking your home for portals? No. Do you know if they're light, dark, or neutral? No. Do you know if there's any portals on your land? Probably not. You know? So is that their fault? No. It's the fault of the whole programming that teaches us that this is just a 3D lower density physical realm reality. When in reality, the inverse is true. It's the opposite. Everything's absolutely spiritual. Mm. And then it comes down into density.
Very much so. I mean, it's one of those aspects as well, Kimberly, because I still find it quite surprising that when we're talking about the paranormal and situations such as this, once again, we seem to be dealing with a lot of preconceived ideas for whatever reason, whoever's created the rule book of what is supposed to go on here.
Right, right.
And for me, I'm always surprised when people say, oh, well, my house can't be haunted. It's only 20 years old. And yet...
Oh, my goodness gracious. Wow.
You know, especially living in England, you know.
Sure.
We've got so much history here.
Yes.
Surely... the land can be haunted, not necessarily the property. It's just the fact that the property's been built on haunted land, is it not?
Yes. And as a matter of fact, when I do my scans on my, you know, quantum technology, people think they're buying a scan for them, their being, their health, their, you know, emotions, their whatever. But often I have to address, because the house is coming up even more than things about them on their scans, the house is saying, whoa, wait, I'm a mess. There's possessed objects and there's mold and there's portals and there's ley lines and there's, you know, Hartman's crosses and there's, you know, negative dimensional creatures. And so the house talks to me and it doesn't matter. I live in a new house and I haven't even corrected all the problems within my house and land, you know, and it's brand new. And so absolutely, you know, the house I moved from, it had a portal that I and my daughter, who's super powerful and also highly gifted, she lived with me for a while. Neither one of us could close it. And it was a both dark and light portal. And so we were getting, one of my dogs ran away because of the amount of spirits that were coming through the house. I was terrified of these spirits. And we, with all our combined knowledge, couldn't even close it. So again, you know, how about the people that moved in there after me, who happens to be a police officer? I bet he's absolutely clueless about things that are noises. I mean, I would hear people running up and down the stairs at all hours of the night. You just get used to it. You know, if you live in Europe, you guys are used to that kind of thing even more than Americans. But in my opinion, you should be anyway. But you know, I was used to it. It didn't bother me. You know, I knew what it was. I knew they were coming and going out of that upstairs portal. And they were literally coming down the stairs and then hitting the door. It was so interesting. But no, he won't know what it is. So again, you are absolutely right. And then we can deal even on a more metaphysical. What about the builder's energy? What about all those guys that were like, well, they do a lot of day drinking here. I don't know why it's a thing when they're a lot of the contractors, you know? And so what about all the drunk guys, you know, building your house, cussing and, you know, looking at porn on their phones and, you know, or what about if it's an old house, all the fights or murders or incest or child abuse or who knows what went on there, or maybe Satan worship. I mean, a million things, or cheating. All that stuff is stored in layers and frequency layers in the walls. And every single word, every single event broadcasts a signal. That's why when we walk in a place, you're like, ew, this feels just really freaky or sad or depressive or angry or scary. It's not the actual house. It's the frequencies that are bouncing off the walls that you're always interpreting. You know, we're always interpreting frequencies. And so that's what causes a house to really be, you know, positive. This is such a happy, light, fun place, you know, or this is like really creepy, let's get out of here place.
So would you say in that kind of situation then that often that's why some people can go in a place and feel absolutely fine, and they can go somewhere else and they get that feeling of goosebumps, that their hairs stand up on the back of their necks, Kimberly, that they feel it just doesn't feel right. It's because they're attuned to that particular frequency, whether they know it or not. It's almost as if the environment is talking to them. And for some people, they just aren't switched on enough.
Yeah, more people. And it has to do with your frequency. So the higher frequency you are, and each have our own frequency, which is the sum total of everything going on in us, our physical things, mental things, emotional things, memories, and past lives. It's all broadcasting into that one, you know, cumulative frequency. So we all have our own frequencies, but some people are higher frequency and some people aren't, you know, and the sensitive people are usually the higher frequency people, and they'll be the ones that will always be commenting. You guys have had friends or family members that are like this. Wherever you go, they're like, oh, I love this place. Or, you know, they're always vocal. They're kind of always analyzing. You kind of get used to it, but there's one in every crowd that's like, let's get out of here, I don't feel comfortable. Even if you go bar hopping, I used to have friends that would be like, ew, I don't like this club. Why? You know, it didn't look any different than any of the other clubs, but it was the feeling.
Yeah, it is a strange sensation when you come across that kind of thing. Like you say, it can happen in any kind of walk of life, I think, whether it's a home or a business or even going on holiday some places. I've been on holiday.
That's a good one.
And I remember going to Scotland, Kimberly, many years ago, and we did a round trip, had a brilliant time. But we went to Glencoe, which is the scene of a very famous massacre. I think using the term battle would be giving the British Army, the English Army, too much manners, I think. So it wasn't the best results for the Klansmen up there. I've never been anywhere. I've been all over the place. I've been to haunted houses. I've been to UFO hotspots here in the UK. I have never been anywhere that made me feel as uncomfortable as going to Glencoe in Scotland, ever. We were supposed to stay there 2 days and I couldn't stay there more than one night. I had to leave.
You know what's odd? Savannah, Georgia. I and my kids took a nice little break, 4 day break, and we went to Savannah, Georgia, and we were staying in one of the older houses. I could only stay there. Similar. I don't know what happened there, but the whole city to me was like evil and dark and frightening and bloody. And I couldn't stand it. We left after, I think, a day and a half, or maybe two, but that's funny because that's my place. That's the only place I've ever left a vacation early because of like what you're talking about, that repulsion or that, just can't do it, you know? So I've experienced that. That's really, you must be sensitive. But you know, it's funny in general. People are like, oh, you know, I just paid, you know, $300 to go to this, you know, how it is, castle or house or place to haunt it and to see ghosts and get pictures of ghosts. And I'm like, come on, let's go down to Walmart. I'll get some pictures of ghosts. Like, there's as many ghosts and human discarnates in your local grocery store, drugstore, or, you know, pub as there is in the haunted places. Probably more.
Well, yeah, I think it's one of those aspects of it, because when we think about, as you were referring to there, about houses and the like absorbing energies, when you think of the modern world these days, Kimberly, you look at shopping centres or grocery stores and you think of the amount of people from different walks of life with different experiences, with different situations, leaking these feelings out. And if we are to believe that they are being absorbed, I would not be surprised that shopping centres and things like that, when you think of the amount of people and the range of emotions that go through those places on a daily basis, I'm surprised we don't hear more kind of situations about a haunted Walmart or a terrifying or a grocery store. I mean, we've got a we used to have a vitamin shop here in Sheffield that was very well known as being quite haunted. And it was quite interesting that whatever lived there had obviously taken a shine to the tills. So that's one of those things where you wonder how long these things have been around, because obviously tills are a fairly recent invention. And yet whatever was there was able to keep playing with the tills, and they'd come into work every morning and the tills would be open.
Wow. You see, when a humidus carnet, which is probably maybe what it was, could have been some other things, but when a humidus carnet in the astral achieves that physicality again in the third, that's when they become a little dangerous, to be honest with you. Those are the ghosts that I kind of stay away from, because they have that ability. They learn, like you said, they're old enough. They can, you know, again, learn how to manipulate 3D reality. So that's a little, that's a little unsettling, in my opinion, you know, that they have that physicality. Because most spirits, and I'll tell you another thing. People think I'm horrible. I will rarely go to a funeral home, because there's so many recent human discarnates, and if they are really good at seeing that you see them, because it's hard to disguise that you can't see them, and they will swarm you, and they will ask you questions, and they'll try to crawl inside you and the people you're with. And I find it really, really disturbing to go to funeral homes, because literally there's more spirits standing around looking dumbfounded than the people that are going, you know, for the people that have passed. It's such an odd place to go to funeral homes for me.
I would imagine a lot of them are wondering, why am I here? What's happened? What? Why am I here? This isn't what I was told. I wasn't promised this would happen. I'm supposed to be somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, heaven or hell, right? Isn't there only two places, heaven or hell? I mean, that's what I was taught.
Absolutely, yeah. I didn't book this trip. It's one of those situations. So when you find that kind of situation, Kimberly, obviously, as you refer to them, funeral parlors and funeral homes, are there other, as you refer to, there are different types of these kind of entities and discarnates that seem to be wandering about. Are there different stages of these kind of entities in regards to the fresher ones, as in people that have recently passed, or as we were touching on there, the ones that have been around a long time and haven't gone, and have learned and seem to adapt to a changing environment that they find themselves in?
There are. Exactly how you said it. You just said it. I'm not going to like repeat what you just said, because people want my answer. Listen to what you just said. You just gave the answer. However, again, if you are a higher vibrating person, you have a greater understanding of this reality, as well as realities outside of here, and you understand where you are, why you're here, kind of the whole thing, which, you know, a lot of people disagree on. But I believe, like me, you're never going to catch me. I mean, I'll hang around. I already told my girls. I said, I'll hang around for a week or two to make sure you're okay, to give you warm, fuzzy emotions, to give you signs, to try to move things, to appear to you. Like, I'll hang around in the astral. But the fourth dimension is not, you know, a happy rainbow dimension. Like, I'm going to go do something else. I'm not coming back to this game. No more reincarnation for this girl. I figured it out. You know, I'm going to go on and do other things in the multiverse and play again. You know, this game was great for, I've been way here way, way too long. But what I'm saying is, but the beings that choose to hang around in the lower density, when you literally have the option, and I mean this 100% what I'm going to say, of doing anything else, the astral is not a good place. The human discarnates that are here after 6 months are generally not positive. That's why there's so many problems and issues with ghosts misbehaving, because the people like you and I are not going to be, you know, haunting people on the astral for 30 years. We will have gone on doing much better, much more fun things.
I mean, that's an interesting aspect. I've always wondered, why do certain spirits come back? What is it that tethers them to wherever they are, Kimberly? Is that something that you've been able to kind of understand more as you dealt with more situations? Or is it, you know, is it one of those roulettes of life that it just happens sometimes?
I think it's choice. We are way, way more powerful than any entity or being has ever let us know generally in our lifetime. And I feel that's one reason why I'm here, to help people understand how powerful they are and awaken their abilities and their powers. So to me, sometimes it's ignorance. People think you die and then you become like Jesus, or you become like Buddha, or no, you do not become all knowing, all you're exactly the same. If I were to pass in the next minute, I would have the same personality, the same knowledge base, the same memory, the same personality that I had talking to you right here. And so we're not taught. The Eastern cultures are better in teaching about death and how it works and what happens. And that's why they burn the bodies. You know, when they burn the bodies, people think it's so horrible. You know, when they burn the bodies like in India and the rivers, and they set them on fire and they're all, you know, laughing and singing and chanting, people think that's horrible in the West. It's because they understand the body is just an avatar. I mean, I've had 1,000. You've probably had 1,000. You seem like an older soul. And who cares? You know, on to the next avatar. If you want to come back and play the game, great. Get a new body. Go on, play the game again. But, you know, if you don't go, they understand that there's options. You know, even a lot of the cults, you know, teach options, you know, versus the religions of the Western, you know, civilization. So it's super interesting. There's just this stigma. I was just talking to one of my clients today. Her father just went into hospice, and I said, Devin's joyful, and talked to him and try to, you know, share that it's actually super joyful. The saddest thing, of course, you're leaving people you love. That's the saddest part. And it's really the people that are left behind that are sad, especially when you have educated or you don't have the knowledge to educate your loved ones about death. My children would be sad, but they also know that I'm fine. They don't have to worry about if their mother's in heaven, if their mother's in hell. I've told them where I'm going. I've told them what I'm doing. We've danced many, many lifetimes. We'll never see each other again, not because of religion, but because we understand the nature of reality. And so I think we need to start talking openly and having conversations, whether we agree or not, about death from outside a religious programming, you know, aspect, and really exploring that. And you've brought up a great point. I'm really fortunate. You actually just made me think about this just right now. I'm really fortunate that I get to talk to beings that have died, and I have partly changed my whole viewpoint on death from my experience with other beings, other races, and human discarnates.
I think that's often the case when we, as you refer to there, when we look at Eastern philosophy and the way that they view the body as a vessel rather than the be all and end all of it, Kimberly. Yeah. And it obviously is one of those situations where the celebration is not of the body passing, but the spirit becoming free, as it were. And often I think when we look at it in a Western prism of religion, it's very constricting, and the body is everything and there is nothing else. And I think when you get that kind of open-mindedness and you absorb cultures from around the world, because they can't, nobody can be right, nobody can be wrong here. They have, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all, I think. And I find it very odd that we still in this day and age have this kind of, this is how it is because of where you're born, rather than...
Ooh, yeah, that's good, yeah.
Rather than looking at the whole spectrum of it, because it's one of those situations that... Everybody can't be right. Everybody can't be wrong.
That's right. I always say nobody has a corner on the truth, including me. I'm learning and changing and adapting. And we also create our own reality. So maybe we're all right because we're creating, you know. And have you seen the picture? There's actually, NASA has a picture. I have it. I can send it to you. Of the heaven ship. There's a ship that's called the heaven ship. And it's crystal. Like if you read the Bible that describes like how heaven's built, that's how this ship, you know, spaceship floating in space looks, and it's all crystal, it has gold streets. You know, have we collectively created that ship because we believed it was the ship there first? You know, is that where heaven is? I mean, I personally do not want to go on the heaven ship. It sounds really boring to me, so I'm not going there. But if you want to go there, and my parents firmly believe in heaven, I firmly believe they're going to be on that heaven ship that we have pictures of because they believe it. So how far, if we change our belief, do we get new possibility? I believe we do. And so I've only been out of religion 3 years, but I'm telling you, you know, people are like so thankful when they come into religion. You've heard it. You know what I mean? You know, I found Jesus, or I found religion. For me, it was the opposite. When I cut free of religion and all the dogma, you know, and all the programming, now I feel like I'm really open to explore for the first time.
Would you, as with anything, Kimberly, would you say that for anybody that's in touch or feels that they have some kind of connection with the world around them far more than the normal perceptions of what is reality, how does someone continue to develop, or how does someone, say, at our age, who suddenly decides that they think these hunches are just hunches, it's a message or whatever, how do you train yourself to become more open-minded, to become in touch with yourself, and to be more receptive to what seems to be happening?
First of all, we got to rewind it way back to be very simplistic. Most people that have these hunches, like let's say I think I'm psychic, but I don't know. And I'm talking to you. And as I'm talking to you, I'm like, oh my gosh, don't go anywhere the rest of the day, you know, or whatever. Mm. Most people wouldn't say that. Most people wouldn't say to you, don't go. This isn't real, by the way. But most people wouldn't say, don't go anywhere the rest of the day. So what I encourage my clients to say, to start doing, that want to develop their psychic abilities, and when I've taught psychic classes, this is one of the first lessons, start speaking. How are you going to know if you're right? You have to have what I call the bounce. The bounce is, did the situation happen? Well, if I don't tell, great Aunt Mary not to go to the grocery store, how do I know if she did? How do I know if anything happened? I didn't tell her. I mean, sometimes you find it out through reading a newspaper or in a casual conversation. But I'd rather, you know, so you tell Aunt Mary, don't go to that grocery store, I think something's going to happen. And then she calls you 3 hours later screaming, and you can barely understand her because she's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, the grocery store was robbed and everybody was held at gunpoint. That's the bounce. If you don't speak it, if you don't test it, you're never going to know. And so I think we need a feedback loop, a positive feedback loop, where we kind of like a staircase where we step up. Oh, I might be a little more psychic than I thought. I'm going to try that again. Another success. Oh my gosh. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to try this again and again and again until then we accept that part. And of course, there's many psychic abilities, so we have a lot of room to practice. And another thing is, we have these beautiful electronics, as you know, that mm-hmm. we can get EVPs. So if we're hearing, let's say, you know, we're in bed at night, every morning we wake up and we think we hear a woman's voice whispering. Well, now we have beautiful electronics where, you know, we can run a recorder. So maybe on the recorder, we hear an EVP or get 10 EVPs of a woman's voice whispering. So we need that feedback, whether it's a person, whether we get the tape recorders or we get the video cameras, we have these amazing cell phones. Oh my gosh, you guys know that your cell phone records through the dimensions, the fourth and fifth dimension. And as your frequency rises, your cell phone works better. So it becomes a better dimensional. As you become more multidimensional, your equipment becomes more multidimensional. And it's another positive, beautiful feedback loop. And you can do simple experiments to see. And you're like, oh, that woman's crazy. I've never seen a spirit in my life. One of my favorite things to tell people to do, and I've never had anyone that has done this, that said it hasn't happened, like I said, is you go in a dark room, you go in a bathroom, you know, it's completely dark. You go in your bedroom, you turn off all the lights, and then you turn on like either a ensuite bathroom or a hall light. So you have one light lit, you shut the door. You relax for a couple minutes. Don't go to sleep. Just kind of relax, let your vision soften. Then just kind of stare casually and softly at the crack under the door. You will see little beings, and I mean little beings, fairies, gnomes, elves, house fairies, and this should be very familiar with you guys in Europe, but you will see beings moving, and you can even get your phone out and record it to show other people. So you will see dark figures moving under your door, you know? And so there's many ways that we can have this positive balance and start to become very accepting and acquainted with both our own abilities and with the, you know, other dimensions, the supernatural world.
How do you deal with new experiences at this stage of your career in regards to this, Kimberly? Is it something that when you have a new case or you have a new client, are you still surprised when you come across something that you've not encountered before? Or is it something, you know, not I'm wishing to sound presumptuous, that I would imagine that as with anything, and as you said earlier, you can't always have the answer and you don't have a fix on this situation.
Right.
Things will change. It's a malleable subject. So are you still surprised? Are you still encountering things that you've yet or that you've not encountered previously?
Oh, yeah. I just encountered the past. I just taught on this in one of my groups. In the past 2 months, I've just encountered this group that we're finding is reversing timelines and change and like kind of undoing progress people are making in their lives. It's an AI group. I just discovered this 2 months ago, and we're finding it happening in everybody's life. I find new groups, new beings, new things all the time. I'll go and, you know, I'll see, I encountered a client who his mother was empty, no living spirit. I call it fire creation. No living spirit, just an empty vessel, I guess, as you would say. She'd walk out. You've heard the term walk in, walk out. She had walked out and she was kind of empty and beings were just kind of coming and going, hanging out, leaving. And her son was so concerned about his mother being an empty vessel, he actually set part of his consciousness into her. So it's kind of like he is her and she is him. And it's this really weird situation. So I see weird, wacky things all the time on all levels from the outside, you know, different ET groups, different races that we're not familiar with. Again, you're kind of a sitting duck. When we, and you mentioned this before about the material world, we're so brought up in the physicality of the material world and we're not taught about other groups and other dimensions and things. It makes us sitting ducks. We wonder, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to get a Ouija board to worship Satan. We're just so ignorant. We're this vessel that we don't protect. We don't guard. We're not aware of. We don't even know. Most people, when I tell them they have a human discarnate in them, again, people don't know. I tell people a lot of things they don't ask because I would want to know if I had something inside me that wasn't me. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when I do scans and I think they're receptive, I'll say, don't worry about it. It's very common. Would you like me to pull out? Now it's your charge. Would you like me to pull out your human discarnate, you know, at the same time? And of course, they're like, heck to the yeah, you know. But I think it's ignorance. Again, going back to, we need to start having these conversations. We need to start wandering around our homes and our properties and other, you know, natural areas with cameras. We need to, and not be so dogmatic, because as you and I both know, the paranormal world and the cryptozoology world, it gets all the infighting and all the egos and all the viewpoints. I mean, we just need to hear each other out. And I call it allow it into your energy field. And you don't have to agree with it. But I'm telling you, 20 years ago, if you told me I was teaching the things or knew the things or experienced the things, I'd say you're crazy. So I think we need to be open to growth and change to move forward as a collective. If we just keep thinking we all know it all and we're not willing to listen and look at each other's evidence, you know what I get accused of? I have the best paranormal pictures in the entire universe. I've got a, like you wouldn't believe, but you know what I get accused of? I have a picture of a little person, which you guys are really familiar with, that are also really big in North Carolina, where I live. I have one of the best class A pictures of a little person wearing battle garb that you've ever seen. You know what I got accused of? Putting a G.I. Joe doll outside my house and taking a picture of it. When we are attacking people like that and we're not open to the possibility that these beings exist and they interact with people, how are we moving forward as a human race? We're not. We're not moving forward.
Do you think it's, as you refer to there about dogma and the way certain aspects of this field are perpetuated and promoted, I'm often interested when people say, oh, my house is haunted, or I feel that we've got a spirit in here that's dangerous or is causing us to be troubled. I'm often surprised how many people are very quick to offer advice such as, oh, well, all you need to do is sage it. I would suggest, Kimberly, that this preconceived idea that sage is the answer to everything is often as dangerous as anything else.
Yeah, and that's a double-edged. There's, you know, everything has like a strand of truth. So sage didn't get its reputation from being completely false, of course. There's some beings. And sage is funny too, because you can clear a whole house depending on the level of beings or the frequency of beings and whether they like the smell of sage, whether they like the frequency of sage or not, or whether they just like breathing smoke. But, you know, you can get a lot of beings to leave. But again, you know, 5 hours later, 8 hours later, I have been in places where I have literally watched those same beings walk back in laughing. They think it's the funniest thing. They actually love that. They love for you to think some of the mischievous. There's a lot of prankster energies. Some of them love to think that you've won. And then they like to kind of prove that you didn't. I mean, they get a kick out of it. And even the human discarnates, here, I'll give you an example. If I'm sitting next to you smoking a cigar, pipe, cigarette, whatever, blowing smoke in your face, are you going to sit within 1 inch of me? No. You might get up and move. You might get up and leave. You might leave the building. You might leave the room. It's no different. But if we're married, if we're friends, you'll probably come back, you know, if I'm not blowing smoke in your face. No different.
Well, yeah, I think that's an excellent point of it. I mean, essentially, if we are to believe that these entities have these abilities to transcend dimensions and realities, why wouldn't they just go go out the room? You know, go for a quick walk.
I mean, they're not stupid. Why do we think Bigfoot's stupid? Why do we think Dogman's stupid? Why do we think human discarnates are stupid? Of course, just like they're stupid human discarnates. Why do we think fairies are stupid? Why do we think these beings are stupid? Why we have the problems we have is because our ignorance and our ego of thinking we're the bomb, the human race is at the top, which it's really not, you know, and we just don't understand. But it's also not our fault. It's part of the game. Most of us don't come in retaining memory of these other beings in other places, even though some of us have been these other beings, which is so bizarre. I meet people that have had lives as fairies and, you know, they don't remember that, you know. It's just odd to me, you know. It's just really, really interesting.
Yes, well, I suppose that you would meet a variety of situations that people would be very surprised if you try to sort of, because I think once again, there are these parameters and explanations, and that's all there is for some people. That's the only answer, Kimberly, regardless. And clearly, as you're saying there, that it isn't as simplistic as this.
Oh, it's so simple and it's so complex, because really, you know, what I've learned is there's infinite possibilities and infinite beings out there. And that's pretty simple, but it's also complex when you really dig down into the nitty gritty, you know, looking at each house, looking at each body, which I do believe is just, you know, like the Eastern people tend to do. I do believe it's just, you know, biological container. We think it's so wet, it has so many organs and so much sophistication. We don't think of it as an avatar or as a robot, but it is. It's just a wetware type robot versus a metallic, you know, type of robot, like we think of a robot. But it absolutely functions the same as a robot does. You know, every human being functions the same. It's the same template, the same wiring. I haven't really met one that is different.
Yeah, absolutely. As with anything, you know, you can take any kind of mechanical contraption. If they're all the same, all laptops are essentially the same, but they don't look the same. They don't work the same. Same with any kind of electronical phenomenon. If you look at it on a base level, it is what it is. A television is a television, but they're not all the same. And that would always be the same when it comes to people.
Right. Yep. And you may think you're just getting, you know, your husband, but your husband could actually be, and most of the time is, multiple beings. And we don't think these multiple beings. So let's say you have human discarnate. You know, people are like, oh, well, who cares? No, that I had to pull two human discarnates out of my son-in-law because my daughter got sick of the behavior that went with the human discarnates. One was a three-year-old little boy, and she was tired of watching her husband drink all his drinks like he was holding sippy cups. And then she got tired of him staying up to 3 a.m, which you wouldn't think you would, but it did get annoying. He would stay up he was also possessed by a 32-year-old woman who had a cleaning fetish. And so he would stay up to, you know, some women would pray for this. He would stay up till 3 a.m. But she got sick of it. So I pulled them both out instantly. And this is how we know instantly the behavior stopped. And he didn't even know. He didn't even realize he was holding his cups like that. He thought it was him that wanted to clean. And he's like, why don't? And she's like, well, do you want to clean some? You know, a couple of weeks later, he's like, I don't clean. He's like, what are you talking about? It's so funny. So it does matter. It does affect you. You know, I like people to have possession of their own body and their own. I even like it further. I like you to have possession of your own house. I like you to have possession of your own, you know, property. Now, I don't have complete possession of my own property. I have many creatures and beings, but we have agreements. We have communication. We work together. You know, I don't think it's right to move into the woods as I did and say, okay, everybody out. I don't think that's right. Mm-hmm. You know, they were here first. So we live in peace. But if for some reason we couldn't live in peace, I would kick them out. And so we just need to learn that not everything is as it seems, for sure.
Absolutely. And I think often it's having a respect for your environment rather than just turning up and saying, right, well, I'm here and that's all that matters.
Yeah, that doesn't always go so well for people. So that's when they call me.
fabulous. Well, Kimberly, what's next for you? What have you got lined up as we enter the new year? And what's on your agenda? Have you continuing to work with clients and develop your skills in regards to supporting people going forwards?
Absolutely. Well, of course, you know, we always offer scans with our technology. We have monthly classes. I teach on different topics and subjects. Probably coming into the new year, we will be doing, it's funny, what we talked about, oddly enough, how to deal with entities and human discarnates. And I like a real live type of class. So we're actually going to be in the class, not just learning techniques of how to depossess people. We're going to be doing live depossessions in the class.
Wow.
On each other. Like they're going to be doing them because that's the best way to do them. You know, not when you're backed into the corner and you have no expert. Like I had to learn, figure it all out yourself and make mistakes, which can be costly. You know, but I'm there as a backup in case something goes weirdly wrong. You know? So yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be an interesting class. So that's coming up. And then we have our live event in Sedona, Arizona, that we're going to have in November where we're going to, it sounds like something you would do. We're going to be, you know, doing ship communication, ship watching. We're going to be doing a lot of Native American Indian ritual ceremonies and live healing and all sorts of things. So, yeah, lots coming next year.
Fantastic. So where can everybody keep up to date with your work and see your classes and your videos on your YouTube channel?
Yeah, absolutely. So everything's pretty much branded under Secret to Everything, which is my business name. So secrettoeverything.com. And then my YouTube is Secret to Everything. And my Facebook page is Secret to Everything. Or you guys can just type my business name or my name in. I've been around a while. Weird stuff will pop out and you can look into it. But we have a lot of, you know, like this show, I try to post all my podcasts in this one too. We'll be posted eventually on the website. So you guys can always access it real easily, you know, and know where to find it. And yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Kimberly, thank you for an expanding conversation. You've taken me to places I didn't expect to go to, but I'm glad I managed to keep up with you.
I think you're brilliant. I just want to thank you. I mean, this was like way beyond the conversation I thought we would have. So I'm really impressed. Thank you for having it.
No, my pleasure. Thank you for joining me. And hopefully we will speak again in the future.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.